Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to The Best of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
Let's start out, VJ, with that Cowboys game I mentioned. And Jerry Jones, as he does every game, which I'm starting to get sick of, and the media is great, but I think this is part of the problem. I have to hear from the owner after every game several times a week. I looked at those players last night, the Dallas Cowboys, who got smashed. Don't be fooled by the score. This was not a close game in any way, shape, or form. I know the final score looked like it was decent. It was Bears 31, Cowboys 24, but it wasn't that close. The Cowboys were out of it for more than half of the game. Bears, they made Mitch Trubisky look like a young Tom Brady. It was ridiculous. And I saw tight players. I saw players who are buckling under the microscope. Now, some of that, you just got a man up, you're a Dallas Cowboy. That's the way it is. But it doesn't help when your owner is just pouring fuel on the fire every single day, it seems. And today, of course, he's on the radio again. 105.3 The Fan, I believe it was, in Dallas. Let's hear what he had to say.
What answer do you have for how this team is playing right now?
We're not playing very well.
Are you embarrassed? Are you embarrassed as an organization about how the team is playing?
Get your damn act together yourself. Okay? Now, we're going to have a good visit this morning, but settle down just a little bit.
What? Well, they didn't ask anything out of line. Here's the thing, too. If you watch last night's game and afterwards Jerry spoke, or when he spoke before last night's game, it was a recent press conference I saw him on, and he comes out and he says, this is going to be really short. They talked about the marathon last time. This is going to be a short marathon. And maybe it was after last night's game, but I saw it yesterday. And then he talked and answered every question they asked. I mean, just talk for, 10, 15, 20 minutes. And I'm telling you, VJ, in my view, there's a lot of blame to go around. Dak Prescott got to step up. I've been saying all year he's en route to becoming elite. He has taken a step back the last few weeks. Ezekiel Elliott, I don't see the burst. Still a very good running back. I haven't seen the burst. He had a nice run last night, probably his best run of the year. But I haven't seen that burst consistently that I've been used to seeing from Ezekiel Elliott. Their receivers have dropped a league-high 23 passes. So the defense has not been as staunch as stout as it was advertised. So there's a lot of blame to go around, and obviously Jason Garrett's in there too. But I think Jerry Jones also. I mean, I don't hear from the Spurs. They've been a great dynasty in the NBA. I don't hear from their owner all the time. Most people don't even know who he is. New England Patriots, we know Robert Kraft, but he's not holding court all the time. So I think Jerry Jones is largely to blame as well for this Cowboys mess. What say you, VJ Husky?
Well, here's my thing, man. This is what I call Suge Knighton calling out P. Diddy at the Source Awards back in the day. Jerry Jones want to be all in the videos. He want to be all in the camera, all in the media. If you don't want any of that, don't go play for the Dallas Cowboys, because that's exactly what you're getting. I heard something earlier this morning that makes perfect sense to me. In sports, there's good jobs, and then there's great, and then there's like those glamour job. Sometimes the glamour job is not as good as the good or the great job. It looks good from the outside, and that's what the Dallas Cowboys is. Everything starts at the top, so why can't we blame the owner? If this network, this great, wonderful network of Fox started to fall, or something started to happen with Fox Sports, people would look at the top. If Apple, people would look at the top. If it was Food Lion, people would look at the top. It starts with the owner. He has to give up his GM powers because he thought he could do what Jimmy Johnson did as far as evaluating talent and and that's just not your category, sir.
Well, I'll give him credit, and a lot of this probably goes to Stephen Jones, of course, his son, who's the executive VP, really, for all intents and purposes, the GM. They have drafted well. They have identified talent well.
Have they?
You don't think so?
I mean, 50-50 coin flip. I'll give you Dak and Zeke. Give me the rest of them. We're giving
going to get Amari. That wasn't a draft, but knowing you need a receiver, true. Going to get Amari Cooper.
True.
Leighton Van Der Esch. I mean, their defense, all the guys on the defense, like, they've got players. I don't think the problem is talent. And I'm not saying they would definitely win the Super Bowl, but they certainly have playoff talent. They certainly have better than 6 and 7 talent. So I don't think the talent is the issue. I think Jerry Jones is meddling.
Yeah.
That's where I would fault him at.
Yeah,
it's just too much.
Well, not only that, he meddles. Like I said, he wants to be all in the videos. He wants to be the show and kind of be the daddy, the granddaddy, the uncle, and the good big brother. He doesn't want anybody else to do anything else. I want to talk about Zeke just also real fast, too, because I said this on another outlet on my own, is that Zeke, once he got that paycheck, you talk about the burst, you're exactly right. Very, very well said. Zeke got that money. Zeke will never be the same running back again. He will never run as hard as he did when he didn't have the money. It's like no Jay-Z album will ever be better than Reasonable Doubt. No Biggie album will ever be better than Ready to Die. When you are hungry, you will work harder, you will rap harder, you will sing harder, you will dance harder, you will talk harder. As soon as some people get that check, it's not the same no more. And you can see.
Well, I'm glad you said some people.
Some people.
Because what separates the all-time greats. And you might get some pushback on your rappers and their albums and all that stuff, but
that's fine.
Because they're
fine.
Obviously all-time greats. But what separates the all-time greats, VJ, is that when they get the money, they don't let up.
True.
LeBron James, I mean, look at it. Everybody's now it's gone the opposite on LeBron. He's playing too hard. He needs to sit out some games. What is he doing? You know, Michael Jordan. Always play. His last 2 years, he was making outlandish money for the NBA at that time. $30 million, $33
million. Yep.
Still played his butt off.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant, like the all-time great Tom Brady. I know he's not, I mean, he could get, you know, he's not getting paid as much as he should. But still, obviously, the money has not taken away from his fire. So I'm not going to say that I don't know if it, you know, neither one of us knows. Is it something inside of him where he's comfortable? He's complacent? Or is it some of the wear and tear? Is it the fact, let's face it, man, I don't care how often you were running in the sand in Cabo.
Absolutely.
You weren't working as hard as your brothers were in training camp.
No, because he's trying to get his check. He was waiting on that check. I don't know, like you.
It might be just, you know, he's not really in the type of shape usually been in.
That's a fine angle to go at, but I'm not buying that. This dude is 23, 24, 25 years old. You remember when it was young, you played ball in your day. You remember when it was like when you was young, you could roll out of the bed, put some flip-flops on, grab a juice box and a bag of Doritos and go drop 30 on the court up the
well,
block.
Well, I could, but that don't mean everybody can. Let me say this about Zeke. In fairness, he's averaging 4.4 yards a carry. 2 years ago, and then he was, you know, when he sat out with the suspension, he only averaged 4.1 yards a carry. His longest run that year was 30 yards. It's 31 yards this year. Last year was 41 yards. So I just don't – I'm going strictly eye test because if you look at the numbers, his production is pretty much on point. He's fourth in the league in rushing. But the eye test, I don't see the same guy.
Exactly. So the 4.4, 4.2, whatever, that's what I call a false blind stat. It means nothing because I'm going by what I see on the field. He does not run with that forward lean like he did up at the horseshoe. He does not run with that forward lean like we saw his previous seasons before he got that money. He's not running as hard. And the defenses know it, too. The defense is no. On the first drive last night, he lowered his shoulder a few times on some DBs. One to the right, and then the one would have run to the left. But when he's hitting that hole and hitting that middle, he's not lowering that shoulder on them linebackers, them 6'2", 255-pound linebackers like he used to. And it's not wear and tear. He got, just my opinion on it, he got his bread. He's not running that hard. And I'm going to defend Dak. I'm with you on Dak. I got to defend Dak because you got to have your running game. You got to have receivers catch the football. The first thing you do, receiver 101, is you run the route, you turn, you put your hands up, you catch the football. 23 drops leads the league. That's not on Dak. You can't blame it.
Right.
Now, last night he looked off. He had two passes that were behind, and he had one that was down in the dirt. We had a wide open Cooper on the inside on a square and about a 15, 16 yard square and on third down, and they just kind of short hopped it. Last night he just looked off, but I think it's starting to kind of set in, and then even his post-game interview, you can start to see that it's starting to set in with him that, okay, we could be in a lot of trouble, and we have way too much talent for this.
Well, let me ask you this. What would you do with Jason Garrett now? Just play out the season with him and get rid of him at the end of the year, assuming you don't make a long playoff run?
You have to, because Troy Aikman said it so eloquently last night. Who do you trust to take over as the interim here? There's nobody that's proven himself in the position coach, or neither coordinator have proven themselves that they could come in and at least maybe help right this ship and get him to a playoff. You've got to ride the season out. But this is the year he has got to go. I don't care how much you love him, Jerry, he's got to go this year.
Yeah, I mean, there were reports, Mike Freeman, friend of the show, Bleacher Report, reported that if he doesn't win the Super Bowl, I don't know if it was win the Super Bowl or get there, I believe it was win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Then he's gone.
Oh, well, he's gone.
I said before the season it was an NFC championship game or bust for Garrett, but I'm with it now. You may not have to win the Super Bowl. You got to get there.
He's definitely.
You have to get there or you're gone.
Yep.
And there's talk about Urban Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
There's talk about Lincoln Riley. You know, so
Two great coaches.
Yes. And I know some people say, well, college coaches haven't come in and done anything in a while in the NFL. I would be willing to give one of those two guys a shot. That's for sure. And Urban Meyer actually has talked about it and sounds like he'd be motivated for it. So it is interesting things. I'm with you on Garrett, though. At this point, ride out the season with him.
Yep.
And then make your changes at the end.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We have had, as I said earlier, some great guests, basketball legends, football legends, acting legends, hip-hop legends, and now we have a boxing legend, none other than the two-time heavyweight world champion and world-renowned entrepreneur, Mr. George Foreman. George, welcome to the Odd Couple.
Boy, am I happy to be with you.
It's great to have you on, and it's a great time to have you. Big fight tomorrow night. Andy Ruiz defends his crown that he took from Anthony Joshua. And the first thing I'm going to ask you about, George, the weigh-in today, Andy Ruiz was 283 pounds. He was 268 when he beat Joshua before, and a lot of people thought he was overweight at that point. Do you think this extra weight is going to be a big problem and maybe a big factor in this fight?
Boy, I hope it's some kind of publicity stunt. Maybe he's got weights in his clothes. He didn't take all his clothes off, you know.
Right.
Maybe it's a trick, but if the champ has come in that weight, I mean, Anthony Joshua has a bird nest on the ground. All he has to do is box him and go 12 rounds. He can't miss.
Yeah, that's – I mean, it made me wonder, could this be a Buster Douglas situation? Remember when Douglas beat Tyson, he was on top of the world, and he came in for his next fight against Holyfield out of shape? You know, you know how it sometimes does it go to your head? You know, you're celebrating
I got on the scene after my initial contact with Evander Holyfield fight. I was asked to go here, asked to go there, and not only asked, but – being paid to travel all over the world. I got so many commercials, and I forgot to train. I didn't forget to eat. And then all of a sudden, it's about 6 to 8 weeks before you fight, and you go into training camp, and you can't concentrate on losing weight and getting in shape. You're going to have to let one go. And that's what I think happened to Ruiz. He just started to concentrate on his conditioning and the weight he has to live with. And you'll make excuses like, I feel better, but it gets to the point at 300 pounds, you'll say that. And when you don't feel better, no one wants to look bad.
Right.
George Foreman here. George Foreman, VJ Vernahusky, number one. Great speaking to you, sir. Such a legendary boxer like yourself. My dad put me on to you, and I watched a lot of your heavyweight fights on old Betamax and VHS tapes when I was growing up as a kid. So that's serious. He loved you and Ali. My question to you would be, I think the heavyweight division today is far less than what it was when the days were Mike Tyson, yourself, Holyfield, Bo, Michael Moore, those guys, and even back into the 80s and the 70s with you, Ali, and Ken Norton Jr., Frazier, those guys. What do you think the major difference is between the heavyweight division of today and the heavyweight division of your prime, and then when you came out of retirement and regained the heavyweight championship again?
But to be honest with you, I'm excited with the heavyweights. Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, the Gypsy King, and Ruiz. I mean, we got competition. On any given night, one guy can clean the other out. So that hasn't happened in a long time. So we are almost back to the glory days of the heavyweights with these names floating around today. I like it. I really do. It'll never be like it was in the late 60s and early 70s when everybody was in there. I was champion of the world. Can you believe Muhammad Ali was number two contender? Frazier was champion of the world. I was number two contender. We won't get like that again. I mean, that'll take a miracle. But I like it today. I really do.
George, I rank, everybody's talking about Deontay Wilder's punch, and I don't think he's a great boxer, but he's got a punch. You mentioned the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury outboxed him, but because of his power, Deontay Wilder got the tie. We saw he was getting beat by Ortiz, but he had that knockout punch. I rank him, I think you, Tyson, and Deontay Wilder are the three hardest hitters I've seen. Would you go with that as well? And where do you think Wilder ranks, versus you and Tyson and maybe Ernie Shavers or whoever else you throw in there as far as hardest hitters of all time?
I'm just happy to have a modern-day boxer, a modern-day fighter who's been developed recently in that conversation. That makes me believe now boxing in the heavyweight division is back. It's hard to rate them. I saw Mike Tyson. It was like a terrible thing out of a nightmare when I saw him become champion. I mean, shaking his head and twitching over there, that was nothing to play with. It'll be hard for me, but then a lot of people who didn't see that, they can easily rate Wilder. But that Tyson was, that was like a Tasmanian thing there,
George, Joshua's got to overcome the mental demons of, this guy knocked him out. And I can only imagine when you've been viewed as invincible, you've been knocking everybody out, you're viewed as the baddest man on the planet, and then you lose. How tough is that to come back from? Obviously, it happened with you and Ali, and I mean, it was a life-changing experience for you. We saw it with Roy Jones. He never was the same after Antonio Tarver beat him. How tough is it to come back when you've been undefeated and all that from your first loss, especially, I guess, if it was a knockout?
You really, for me, I just have to look at it. You got to go back into training. You got to get the proper sparring partners and forget about it. The worst thing in the world is having an ex-heavyweight champ like myself becoming a psychologist on the side, I don't have a couch. I don't think either of the guys will need a couch. All they need is to get in shape and have the confidence again. I've been there, and I know that's all it takes. And then you get a break. A guy just underestimates you, and then you can knock him out. But there's nothing to it. Believe me, it's not all that.
Champ, a question I love to ask the great legendary athletes of my lifetime, so I got to make sure I throw this one at you. Pound for pound, greatest boxer you ever laid your eyes on that's not named George Foreman.
When I witnessed the films of Joe Louis, and I've never seen any boxer anywhere who've come close to that.
Wow.
That was a punching machine. And lately, there's a guy, he's not from the United States, it's Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, what a talent. I mean, the guy is special.
Yeah.
And that's what I like, because he punches too. He tries for a knockout. Nothing stops him. Mayweather was a fine boxer, but, you know, go Joe Louis, and in present time, give me Canelo Alvarez, and who's in limbo is Mayweather.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting.
Very.
George, I've heard, because when you look at Ruiz versus Anthony Joshua, everybody looks at Joshua's muscles and his frame, and you wonder how in the world could he lose to this guy. But I've heard boxing experts and even some ex-boxers talk about how, you know, you saw a lot of video of Joshua lifting weights and all that. But in boxing, that doesn't necessarily help you. It can actually hurt you. Like, you have to remain fluid, and just lifting all these weights isn't as great as it seems for a boxer. Can you talk about that? You know, can we be fooled by looking at a guy's physique? And is it different, you know, for a boxer than having to have all these muscles and win the Mr. Universe contest?
Yeah, I was I had a fight in San Francisco, my first amateur fight. They had trained me to be the splendid boxer. I could move, I could jab, bob and weave. I had the speed bag and the punching bag. Perfect. Then I got the first bell ring. The guy came over by the name of Winters, and he knocked me down so hard, I started seeing triples and doubles of people out there. I got up because I could hear the referee count, and every time he'd count, people would leave. I didn't know it was a vision thing. But I remember thinking, you know what? I'm going to have to put this boxing down and fight this guy for a few minutes. And that's what the story of boxing. It's not about anything else. It's about, can you fight? Will you fight? And anytime, as long as there's a truck driver who's been pushed around, you're going to see great fighting. Boxing is not about boxing. It's about if you're willing to fight. And that's what Ruiz was willing to do. He got knocked down.
Right.
None of his stuff was working. But he got up, and he started to fight Anthony Joshua, and Joshua just couldn't deal with that. He said, why does this guy keep fighting me? Why don't he box? Little chubby guy, box.
Right, right. Nah, that makes sense.
Champ, I'm getting a little up there in my age. I might need some of this stuff. Tell us about your real-time pain relief. You are the entrepreneur of boxing in history. I've had about 30 of your grills in my lifetime. Tell us about this real-time pain relief you got going on, Champ.
Yeah, it's the George Foreman formula. You can actually get it on Amazon. But the thing is, I've had old aches, and I thought, I'm just going to be having to live like that. That's just the way life is. And I put this stuff on different positions, rub it on here and there, and all of a sudden I get to sleep comfortable. It really works. It's seldom you'll have a product that you can promote that works. This George Foreman real-time pain relief formula, it really works. I found something that helps me. And you know, good about it, I've got 14 grandkids. They come in. They want to play. And if you have something for soreness and it smells, you can hear them talking. Don't go over there with Grandpa. He smells like Grandpa. This stuff, they don't even run away from you. They say, you know what? He doesn't smell. And they come over and play with you. And that's what I like about it. It works. And you don't smell like Grandpa. You don't.
Well, George, it's been, as VJ said, an honor and a pleasure to have you here on the iCouple. We thank you for your great insight. So it sounded like your pick. Is your pick Joshua for Saturday?
Yeah, I think, thinking as a professional boxer, the guy is so heavy, all he has to do is box him around, just move around, win the fight on jabs like Muhammad Ali did. Leon Spinks, number two. Don't have to worry about it. Get him tired. Go back to his corner. The hardest thing will be for Joshua to get up off that stool with all that weight. Once you're down there, you think, ooh.
That feels good, right?
It feels good. This feels pretty good here.
Yeah.
All right, George. Well, great stuff, man. We appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Champ.
Thank you. All right, bye.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker, weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We were talking last hour, briefly, VJ, about Utah versus Oklahoma in the playoff. And, hey, maybe we won't have to worry about it. Now, obviously, Oklahoma's got to take care of business about against Baylor this weekend. But Utah down 10-0. I know it's early. It's toward the end of the first quarter. But they're down 10-0 to Oregon. So maybe we will get that dream foursome. And certainly when we talk about quarterbacks of Trevor Lawrence from Clemson, Justin Fields, Ohio State, Joe Burrow, LSU, and Jalen Hurts, Oklahoma in the playoff. I would love to see that. And speaking of that, VJ, and I know you cover college football a lot, Jalen Hurts, let's give that dude a hand for the great decision he made.
Yes.
To leave Alabama, nothing against them, but his decision to leave there and go to Oklahoma has given him a chance to play in the NFL.
Absolutely. And I like Jalen Hurts. I've always liked Jalen Hurts. He's just a great young man. He's a great quarterback. And he saved Nick Saban in Alabama so many times. It's not even funny. I hated the way that he got done there. I get that it's business and it's politics that goes along with a lot of college football, even all the way up to the broadcast booth, which I learned myself this past season.
Let me ask you, you think he's better than Tua?
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Tua is severely, listen to me, America. He is severely overrated.
Stop it. This is the first
show. Yes, he is. He is severely overrated.
Now, he's injury prone. I give you that, but
he's
the boy
overrated.
Can throw the football.
Anybody could do. Jeff George could throw the football.
We can name
a bunch of guys.
How'd they look with Mac Jones last weekend?
What do you mean? How'd they look?
He's
they put up 45
touch,
points.
But they lost. They wouldn't have lost that game with Tua.
Well, how can you score
as many points as is necessary?
Well, I mean, Tua had a game where he had 40-some points and lost a national championship game.
Tua was a national championship. That was
overrated.
A 15th-ranked Auburn or whatever they were. Tua is a great passer. He's got touch. He's got accuracy. My concern with him is his health, because he has not been able to stay healthy.
And let me just say this, Chris. When I watch
he's
a quarterback.
He's a better passer than Hurts.
Listen,
come on, man.
Listen, when I watch a quarterback, I watch their feet first. The first 10 plays I watch, any quarterback that I watch, I say this when I'm doing college football on live radio all over this country, I watch their feet first. At Alabama, it's easy to hit open wide receivers. Look where a lot of these receivers are catching the ball.
It's not easy at Oklahoma?
Hold on, look where these receivers are catching the football. Low, behind them, going high. He's very inaccurate. It looks good if the guy catches the ball. Then we go, oh, wow, look at that arm he can throw. In the NFL, you mark my words, those windows close tighter. Those windows are smaller in a lot of games. Those windows will not be. His receivers at Alabama are running against corners who will be bagging groceries in 8 months or be an accountant somewhere.
And who's Oklahoma playing in the Big 12?
No, I didn't say that. There's a difference. Hold on. I'm not saying that he is that Jalen Hurts also isn't throwing into wider windows. But Jalen Hurts hits guys in the numbers. Jalen Hurts hits guys in the hands. Tua's passes, nobody pays attention to this. Just go back and watch the film. His passes, he's very, very inaccurate, but he has great receivers right now, and he had them last year. Just trust me, the injury-prone thing you can't control, so I don't even like – you're right about that, but I –
No, I mean, there's some – but some of this is – some guys are just more injury-prone.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it with Andrew Luck. Some guys' bodies are just built a little weaker than some other guys. But just I said it over the summertime, this whole tank for Tua thing was a major mistake for any franchise that was going to put their future in the hands of a Nick Saban quarterback. You name me the last Nick Saban quarterback, you can go all the way back to Michigan State, okay, when he had Cedric Irvin at running back in 97 and 96 and 95. Name me the last Nick Saban quarterback to come to the NFL and do anything.
But
they all look great at Alabama.
But that's the thing. Tua is not your typical Nick Saban quarterback. Hurts is.
Nah.
No, Hurts was your typical Nick Saban quarterback.
Man,
a manager can run, you know, an adequate passer.
Hurts
I'm not saying Tua is going to be Aaron Rodgers, but I'm saying they did not make the wrong move by going to Tua over Hurts.
No, I don't think they made the wrong
move. He's a better passer than Hurts.
I don't think they
made
the wrong move, and that's fine.
Okay.
I don't think he's a better passer than Hurts. I think
he's completing 71% of his passes. I get what you're saying. You don't complete 71% and be inaccurate.
When you have four potential first-round receivers, yeah, you can, Chris.
No, I'm not saying dudes aren't making some great catches and some of his passes might not be off target. But 71%.
I get it.
That's all I'm saying. If you complete 71%, you got some degree of accuracy.
Listen, you and I have grown past colleagues. We are now friends. You are my big brother and my mentor. You know this. We will revisit this. I will send you a text message 3 years from
none.
Now. You clearly don't want none.
You're
CB, you know, no, retreating. I'm not retreating. I'm telling you, you didn't even let me get this up about Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts, and I don't like this NFL quarterback because he doesn't embrace his vanilliness like he should. But Jalen Hurts is the next Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is one of the Vanilla Brothers, but he don't embrace his vanilliness like he should. And that upsets me. And that upsets me about him.
I don't know what that means, but keep going.
Yeah, that upsets me about him. He doesn't embrace his vanilliness enough for me. But
I like Hurts.
Yeah, he's the next Russell Wilson.
Well, you know who I think could be the next Russell Wilson?
Who you got?
Justin Fields.
I love that kid.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that kid.
I think that could be. But, you know, we got some great quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And, again, with the league opening up now, right, to guys that are mobile, guys that can run. 15 years ago, a lot of these guys we mentioned, Jalen Hurts wouldn't have even got a sniff.
No.
From the NFL years ago.
Lamar Jackson. I mean, go down the list. Lamar Jackson, maybe Cam because of Cam's size. But it goes all the way back to Warren Moon. Warren Moon came out of Washington, won a Pac-12, won a Rose Bowl. He had to go win five Grey Cups in the Canadian League before one coach down in Houston would even give him it. So, but no, the league is opening up. Real quick, just a really cool stat. The top five, I think it's five out of six statistically across the board, quarterbacks are right now in the NFL, African American, and we're told you probably can't play quarterback in this league. Something to think about, people.
Well, no, those days are over.
Yeah, oh, those
days clearly over.
Done.
And I gotta be honest, I don't even think the Lamar Jackson thing was racial. Because, I mean, we've seen black quarterbacks drafted number one going way back now. And then even in his draft, I mean, in his era, you know, Deshaun Watson, I mean, you've seen African-American quarterbacks given a chance. I thought, and I think most people felt, it was more his style. Let's be honest, this question remains open. But I've never thought you could run the ball that much in the NFL and remain upright. I mean, I think with Cam Newton, people say, oh, he's 30. He's only 30, 31. No, his body is beat up from all the hits he's taken, and he's twice as big as Lamar.
Yeah.
So that I really don't think it was racially motivated with Lamar. I think it was you can't stay healthy running the ball like this, and he's not the greatest passer. Now, credit to him, he has improved dramatically as a passer, but I think it was more that than racial with Lamar.
I think so, too. I won't put it on that, but there is this overtone over the NFL and over football, period, that your quarterback has that. Like, because I've heard radio guys say some outlandish stuff. I've heard a guy say, hey, I like my quarterback from a two-parent home. That really ticked me off. I could not believe, I'm not going to put his name out, but I couldn't believe that a guy who had been in the industry that long would actually come out and say something like, what do you mean in this picture that keeps circulating with him at the draft with his head down and his mama right there? I was raised by a single mom, so I embraced that. I embraced that picture and embraced that look that a mother is his agent, and she told the story at the Heisman where she was out there playing tackle football with him and his friends and his kid and in the neighborhood kids and training him, and she was pretty much his trainer and coach. So I don't think, you know,
here's what people have to understand, and obviously, you know, I believe firmly a two-parent household is ideal. Forget sports, just in every situation. But when you look back, and whoever that broadcaster was that said that will probably point to some of the great quarterbacks of the past, you have to understand society. I mean, most people of all races came from two parents' households in previous generations.
Yeah.
Not this past one, but, you know, ones before that. And so, of course, the better quarterbacks historically probably came from two-parent households. But, you know, to say that nowadays these guys can't be great quarterbacks, I mean, one of the great leaders we're seeing in the NBA is who? LeBron James.
Yeah, exactly.
And he came from a single-parent household. I believe, did Deshaun Watson, I believe.
Single-parent.
Single-parent household.
Single-parent
and
household.
Clearly one of the great leaders.
Kevin Durant, single-parent household.
Yeah, so, you know, it happens like that. But yeah. It's going to be interesting to see these guys play at the next level and really see where the game goes. I'm giving it, VJ, two. I think because they're rushing to judgment when we say the game is changed and it's going to be revolutionized. Now, it's faster, so your quarterback does need to be mobile. We see that with virtually all of the really great young quarterbacks from Pat Mahomes to Lamar to Josh Allen and so on and so forth.
Yep, D. Watts.
Right. Yep. But I think let's see how Lamar and Baltimore do in the playoffs when teams that they are playing against are a lot of them seeing them for the second time. Let's see what they do to New England if they should meet when they've seen them for the second time. Now, Kansas City's defense isn't good, but they'll see them for the second time perhaps. And so let's see that. And then let's see Lamar next year with, again, everybody's got tape on him, and can he stay healthy doing this? And he'll probably continue to improve as a passer. So I think if he gets through next year and maybe they win a Super Bowl or they keep going deep in the playoffs and he's healthy – I think you will have – then we will really see a revolution of the quarterback position because everybody's going to start looking for that type of guy and coaching to that type of guy.
And I agree with that, but here's my knock with even that statement. Why is it always or most of the time – not always, Grandma said nobody never or always does anything, so not always. But why is it most of the time that when it comes to, well, let's see this, or when they get more film – no one said that about Sam Darnold. No one said that about Mitchell Trubisky. No one said that about Andrew Luck when he had a great rookie year. Why is it that the African-American quarterback is always subjected to, well, let's see when they have to play him a second time. Well, let's see
what
people get film on.
And I don't think it's the African American quarterback. I think it's because of the style of play. Like Andrew Luck was a passer. Like that's not new. That's unique. That's what's always been the case, and that's sustainable. Lamar is playing an entirely different way. That's why we're saying okay. Because and let's face it, last year in the playoffs, that's exactly what happened with the Chargers. He ran all over him in the regular season. They meet him for the first time or the second time in the playoffs, and they shut him down. So I think it's more, at least for me, you know, certainly being an African-American, it has nothing to do with, oh, you know, he's black. I'm throwing it out that way. I'm throwing it out because he plays such a different way, a unique way, that the first time he catches you, you're going to be off guard, and you're not going to be ready for it. You can't simulate it in practice. The second time you're more comfortable with it, you know what's coming. That's what I'm talking about.
And I could agree with a little bit of that, but at the same time, why can't he get better? People used to say that about Mike Vick. Oh, well, wait until they see Mike Vick again. And all Mike Vick did was change the way the quarterback position single-handedly is played in the NFL.
He didn't. No, he didn't.
You don't think Mike Vick did
that? No. Vic had a nice career, but Vic didn't. I mean, Vic did not revolutionize the game. Randall Cunningham ran. Donovan McNabb ran. Now, they weren't – I mean, Randall was a dynamic runner.
Yeah, well, Randall was my guy as a
Vic's
kid.
Vic's best year was when he was mainly a passer in Philadelphia with Andy Reid.
I don't know. I think that's what the narrative has been made. But
Lamar Jackson.
Vic's best year was what? 03, 04 was Vic's best year.
Nah,
he ran for 1,000 yards and they won a playoff game, Chris. They went up the Lambo on one.
His best year, was he in MVP consideration that year?
I don't remember.
I think it was 2010.
Yeah, true.
He was ridiculous, and it was mainly because he was throwing the rock. Now, he still could run, obviously.
Yeah.
But
he also had
now,
weapons to throw
I don't
to,
think
too.
Vic, I mean, look, taking nothing away from him, but he wasn't doing what Lamar's doing.
He was not.
This
is a topic. I know we got other stuff to get to.
Lamar about to break his record in what, 12 games?
I get that, but Lamar also has a defense that Vic didn't have, and the difference with Vic in Atlanta and the Vic in Philly. The Vic in Atlanta, his best receiver that he ever had in Atlanta was an overweight tight end by the name of Algie Crumpler. He didn't have a receiver.
Crumpler was pretty good.
Oh, he was.
Why are you killing Crumpler?
Because Algie. Well,
you
listen,
don't like the name.
Number one, I don't like that name at all. I want to talk to this, whoever signed the birth certificate, Algie. To go with Crumpler? No, the heck no. But
Algie Crumpler, I like it.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.